Welcome to the Boston College Chief Executives Club podcast of the November 10th, 2020 forum featuring Larry Culp, Chairman and CEO of General Electric. I'm Warren Zola, the Executive Director of the Boston College Chief Executives Club. The Boston College Chief Executives Club, a program of the Carroll School of Management, is one of the top-ranked CEO speaking forums in the world. Several times each year, Boston's business leaders gather to learn from CEOs of global companies, leaders from the top echelons of their fields, who welcome the opportunity to address an audience of their peers. Larry joined us for a series we call Conversations with CEOs as he spoke with me and we engaged in a Q&A with our members. The conversation focused on GE's response to COVID-19, their ongoing transformation, lean management, and the importance of culture. Please enjoy this podcast of the Boston College Chief Executives Club. We are thrilled to welcome Larry Culp, the Chairman and CEO of General Electric. So, Larry, thank you again so much for joining us today here, at least via Zoom.
Pleasure to be with you and everybody. Associated with BC. I know GE and BC enjoy a long-standing relationship, and it's good to be part of that next step here.
Well, wonderful, and we're thrilled to have you here today, and we're thrilled to have General Electric here in Boston and Massachusetts. It was not that many years ago when we welcomed Jeff Immelt, who came to our stage and made an announcement that Seaport would be the home of General Electric. So again, on behalf of Boston College and the Chief Executives Club, and certainly this region, welcome. Again, real quick ground rules. I think our members are familiar. This session will last 75 minutes. We will have a prompt adjournment, as we always do, at 2:45. And thank you, Larry, for joining us for that time. The first 30 minutes or so, Larry and I will have a conversation at the top of the hour at 2 o'clock. We will open it up for our members to ask questions. Please use the chat or the Q&A features. And what we will do when it's time is we'll call upon you and we'll turn off your microphone and allow you to ask Larry the question. And then he will respond. We'll end that around 2:30 and Larry and I will have our lightning round of questions. So again, that's our format. Thank you again to our Board of Governors and our members for joining us. So with all that welcome out of the way, let's get started. Larry, under your leadership, General Electric has been in the midst of a major and positive transformation. How have those efforts been impacted by the current pandemic?
Well, Warren, we were making a lot of progress prior to this spring when COVID hit us and hit everybody else. I can remember back in February, coming out of our first quarter operating reviews, thinking that the commitments we made to really show progress in 2020, turning around both our power and renewables businesses, would play out through the course of the year. I think we just got off to a really strong start in those businesses, important businesses. We keep the lights on, as you know, but these were businesses that were facing, I think, a number of internal challenges that we would need some time to work through. And we thought we would have that time, in part because our aviation and our healthcare businesses were just doing so well, both leaders in their markets globally. And as part of our effort, not only to improve our operational performance, but to deleverage the balance sheet, we were literally weeks away from a $20 billion check coming to us through the sale of our biopharma business. So I thought 2020 was going to play out very much as we had planned it. And then, of course, and we saw it early in Wuhan, our healthcare team was on the front lines from the very first days there, that COVID was going to be a major challenge for all of us. So very quickly, our aviation business was down at levels we really hadn't seen, really even post 9/11. We were down 80%, if you can believe it, in terms of daily departures. And if the planes don't fly, we don't make money. So that was a real problem. And in healthcare, our second largest, second best business in terms of financial performance, we were hit hard there as well, even though we ended up playing a major role around the world in helping clinicians deliver care, so much of our business came to a virtual standstill. And we could see that literally day by day in terms of the utilization of our installed base of MRI and CT machines. So very quickly, we needed to manage those two businesses differently, to recognize that we were in a completely different environment. We've worked our way through this year, and we can get into more detail if you'd like, taking a number of cost reduction actions in aviation in light of the downturn. Things have improved, but our daily departures that were down 80% in April are now down 40%. Recovery, but still way off a baseline. Fortunately, our healthcare business has come back quite nicely. We were up double digit organically in the third quarter. Good underlying margin performance. And those turnarounds we needed to prove out this year, here in November, I can say, have played out more or less the way we had anticipated they would. They certainly had COVID challenges as well, particularly given that we couldn't travel. And that's very much a global service business. But as those restrictions have lessened and we have found workarounds through technology, we've been able, I think, to show folks that those can be good businesses for GE as well. But it's been, Warren, I think, like nothing any of us have ever seen. And it's not over, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the unfortunate part, but obviously General Electric is thrilled to have you as the leader because, you know, leadership now is becoming even more important. And so one of the questions I have is sort of about the aviation business specifically. Obviously, you've had to pivot with the reductions in that line. We were fortunate enough to have Robin Hayes from JetBlue on a couple of weeks ago, and he talked a little bit about the changes that he was seeing from the commercial carrier for most of us. But from your vantage point, what are you seeing? And then I'm also interested in terms of what do you think it's going to take to get the public having confidence in going back on the airplanes?
Right. Well, I think we're optimistic about people returning to flight, but again, I think what we have seen in our own numbers is a recovery off those April lows, but we're well off in terms of daily departures. And we watch that, Warren, platform by platform and region by region. So we can see what's happening. And it's really a fascinating story because if you look at China today, China's back in terms of departures almost to pre-COVID levels. So we've seen China bounce back quite dramatically. You saw both in the US and in Europe during the course of the summer, July, August, people getting back into the air. Now, it wasn't where we were in July or August of last year, but you could see people trying to break through even in the absence of a vaccine. It wasn't that long ago that the US passed the million passengers a day mark going through TSA. So there were signs, but clearly the recent case data, some of the lockdowns in Europe, for example, suggest it's going to take a little while. To get people back, I'm not sure we necessarily need a vaccine exclusively. It'll help, and we were certainly heartened by yesterday's news. But you could see in the course of the summer, people want to get back. I think the industry is increasingly speaking with one voice. The International Trade Association, IATA, has, I think, been more clear here of late relative to the safety of being inside an airplane. Certainly here locally, we've had A4A and Harvard put out another study that suggests being in an airplane can be safer than going to the grocery store. So I know that won't necessarily be comforting to every potential flyer, but the cumulative effect before a vaccine, I think, will help. And if the news yesterday is any indication of what could happen next year, we're optimistic that both the leisure and the business traveler will be back. We want to be in a position that we're helping the JetBlues and every other carrier around the world safely return their fleets to full service so that flying experience is safe and as efficient as it possibly can be.
Well, I mean, we're looking forward to that. And it certainly feels all summer that it's, you know, two steps forward, one step back, but you're starting to feel, you know, a little bit of momentum, although there's, you know, every day, you know, you're on the internet or the news or Twitter, and all of a sudden, you know, just when you thought you were feeling good, you've got some pullback. But coming back to sort of your you're coming into General Electric for the first time in 128 years. This company hired a CEO from outside, and they brought you in. Why do you think it was the right move at the time? And what surprised you coming into GE from, you know, first on the board, but then as the CEO, just as an outsider, if you will?
Well, Warren, I'm not sure it was the right move. I was outvoted both in the boardroom and at home. But it's been an honor. It truly has been to be associated with GE the last 2.5 years, the past 2 years as chairman and CEO. When I joined the board in the spring of 2018, along with a couple of other colleagues, Tom Horton and Leslie Seidman, we joined a board that had been reset. It was a relatively new board. It was a smaller board than GE had enjoyed historically. And the company had a number of pressing challenges. And I think we took the view that this was just a very tough setup for a new CEO. Being CEO, as so many of the club members know, is a very different job than anything that we've done before. And it's particularly so, I would argue, when you're managing a portfolio of businesses, particularly under the pressures that we were under back then. So I think the board took a view that an experienced CEO, somebody who had run a portfolio, was probably a better fit for what GE needed at the time. I said then, I'll repeat again today in front of the club, I think history will treat John Flannery very well. I think John was dealt a tough hand, dealt with it ably, and put us on the path for so much of what we've done in the last couple of years. But having a fresh perspective, having the experience of managing a company, an industrial company like GE, I think has been helpful as we have worked through not only the issues, but frankly, the opportunities, right? Because this is a company, given the nature of the work that we do in energy, in aviation, healthcare, that has plenty of opportunities in front of it. And as we work through some of those issues, we're keen to have those be part of the past and focus much more on the opportunities that lie ahead.
And I think despite your modesty, I think that the markets have thought that it's been a great hire. So some kudos on that. One of the things that you mentioned briefly earlier and doing my research and reading and watching videos and everything was sort of this consistent talk about General Electric's sort of lean management efforts. And I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about what that means to you and the company, more importantly, obviously.
Sure. Warren, I had an opportunity very early in my career to go to Japan and really study with the masters that had worked at Toyota with Taichi Ono, I think well regarded as the father of the Toyota production system. And the shorthand for that today is lean. And lean is a bit of a Rorschach test type question. But for me, lean means a few things. One, a maniacal focus on the customer. It also suggests that you need to be operationally oriented every day at Gemba, the Japanese word for where the real work gets done. And you need to be committed to Kaizen. Again, the Japanese word for continuous improvement. And I know that may sound trite, but when I joined the board and certainly as chairman and CEO, I saw a host of situations where we were not as focused on serving the customer in the way the customer wanted to be served. There were plenty of opportunities for us to be more robust in our daily management of safety and quality, delivery and productivity, let alone have a culture of continuous improvement. And to do so, you have to recognize that not everything's perfect, right? That most everything can be improved. It's one thing to say those things, the lean philosophy, the Toyota model, the model we used at Danaher provides everyone in the company with the tools and the methods by which you can actually put those words into action. And that's really what we have been working on at GE the last 2 years. And I think with some early progress, but much more to come.
But I mean, how do you do that with a company as large and as vast with so many different industries as GE, right? I mean, the concept of lean management and cutting costs and customer centric and, you know, in the continuous improvement, they're fantastic, right? We're in a business school here. We talk about it all the time with our students.
Right.
But it's a lot easier if it's a smaller contained organization or entity. Something that the size of GE, is it like, how are you managing all of those levers?
More than one bite at a time, right?
Fair enough.
And what I mean by that is that what we've tried to do is be really clear that GE is not a monolithic organization, mm-hmm. right? We've got an aviation business, which is a number of businesses in its own right. Our renewables business is onshore wind, it's grid, it's offshore wind, healthcare, similarly. So what we've tried to do is make sure we're really clear about, if you will, the units of measure, mm-hmm. and then business by business, bite by bite, shape a conversation, shape the operating mechanisms and the metrics that make it clear to everybody that it's about the customer, that we're going to be more operational. We're going to talk daily about safety, quality, delivery, and productivity. And no matter how well we're doing, we can always be better. So let's methodically pursue Kaizen, right? And it's a lot of touch points all the time. Fortunately, it's not just me. I think we've got a leadership team today made up of GE veterans and folks we brought in from the outside who subscribe to this operating model. And what was really neat, one of the real surprises, Warren, is when I first started talking about Lean at GE, there were a whole host of folks who came running out of the hills. People who had trained under some of the same Lean masters that I had worked with 20 years ago that had the skills, but hadn't necessarily been recognized or deployed to the fullest extent possible. So they were the hidden army that came running and said, we can do this. We used to do it. Let's do more of it. And they've just been an incredible resource for us. So again, it's early, but I think we really are on our way relative to having a Lean transformation take root at GE.
I love the concept of these Lean masters coming out as the Sensei comes in and you know, you're all getting together to sort of work on both these issues, but also the organization's culture, right? Because that has an impact. So I'm going to shift a couple of questions.
No, I'm sorry, Warren. You're spot on, right? When we talk about all of that operationally, but ultimately the real reward is the cultural change. But we also brought last summer 120 of our top leaders together for a week of a Kaizen for a Kaizen in our Greenville, South Carolina gas turbine facility. I brought over Katahira-san, my sensei from way, way back. And through an interpreter, he just beat us senseless, teaching all of us not only the tools, but again, the cultural aspects of what a real Lean transformation can be. And that was an important moment for us.
I know you've been occasionally been over at HBS, so I hope at some point you'll share your wisdom here on campus when we're opening it up. Like I said, I was doing some research, and one of the more amusing things that I found, the more I thought about it, the more I thought that it actually was very apt, was you've actually been likened to Bill Belichick. You both excel at identifying talent and placing people in the best position to maximize their abilities and their talent. Obviously, that's high praise indeed here in Boston. Any advice to your fellow CEOs here that are listening about sort of how to identify that talent, build that culture, and put them in the right positions?
Warren, I don't have any rings, so you know, Coach Belichick's in a different league. But you know, I think I learned maybe the hard way as a young leader that it's ultimately all about the team, right? I'm sure a lot of us have filled out surveys that have asked, you know, how much time do you spend on operations, on strategy with the board, investors, talent. What I think I've come to appreciate and what I try to operationalize is that almost all of our time as CEOs is ultimately about the team, mm-hmm. right? And we can't spend enough time recruiting, interviewing, referencing, yeah. Let alone developing and giving feedback and coaching all along somebody's career path. And I think a number of those steps end up being outsourced, sometimes to recruiters, sometimes to the HR team, what have you. And I just think that that's a mistake. And even in an operating review or a strategy review, we may be there ostensibly to hammer out a budget or make sure our strategy long-term makes sense. I try to go in those meetings also with an agenda with respect to who do I need to maybe coach up a little bit? Who do I need to cast a more critical eye on in terms of whether they're going to make it or not? And if you just let those meetings be about budgets or strategy, what have you, I think you miss an opportunity to really shape and mold the team and ultimately the culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really important, right? I mean, I think a lot of people, when they talk about culture or bringing in talent, it's about the acquisition, it's about the onboarding and identifying and bringing in. But as you so aptly stated, it's also about what you have and molding them to move forward in the future so that they can continue to be everything they can be, right? Just because Bill Belichick drafts player A and puts them on the team, you know, the coaching just begins then. So I think that, you know, the way that you're doing it is the right way. Is there anything that 2020 or the way that we've gone virtual has impacted that either positively or negatively, that you're able to, you know, you find yourself doing more interviews like this with people, and maybe it's helping you guys in culture? Is there anything that's been changing?
Well, I think we have made a concerted effort, like so many, I'm sure so many in the club have, to fill the vacuum, fill the void that COVID's created with so many of us not in the office together. The technology today is wonderful. I'm sure we've all been amazed by the way this has worked, and we'll use it more going forward than we have. So that's been a positive. It's the casual moment in the hallway, right? It's the body language that is hard to read when someone's off screen that I think is an important part of understanding people, helping, motivating, criticizing, right? And I think that more human element is tough to replicate. So I think we're keen to get everybody back together at some point. It won't be exactly the same, but those are the things I think about, particularly with our younger associates. I suspect many in the club vividly remember just what you learned by osmosis early in one's career. That might be a little tougher through a computer screen today. So when we get on the other side of COVID, we need to make sure we really tend to the younger people who may have missed a little bit of those developmental experiences over the last year or so.
Yeah, no, I think that's really an important comment, right? It's those, you know, I mean, one of the things I miss is walking around campus and running into people that, you know, I have no particular reason to schedule a Zoom call with to spend 30 minutes talking about, but those opportune times just to catch up, and then all of a sudden you build those relationships. And I see it from my daughter's perspective. She's 24. She started a job end of August with the New England Revolution. And she's on Zoom. And this concept of starting her career in an exciting job and not really having that day-to-day mentorship, not having the ability to meet people outside of her cocoon of here's her responsibilities, I think is harmful long-term. Now, hopefully I'm going to knock on what I think is a wood desk. This is not a permanent scenario. But I very much appreciate the understanding from the CEOs who are saying, you know, those of us have been around for a while, we know the people, we know what to do, you know, for better or worse, you know, not that I'm not evolving, but I've mostly evolved. But the young folks who are sort of just starting off, this is such a critical time for them to learn. And you think about the opportunities that they're missing.
Right. No, I think that's true. And Warren, I would add to that if you are a long way from headquarters, and let's just say, take the GE team in China, right? Reading a lot of headlines that can be critical, can be concerning. Again, the technology can help fill the void, but gosh, I'm so keen to sit with some of those teams again, right? Just to have a more interactive, more personal conversation about things. But you know, we'll get to the other side. I'm absolutely convinced of that. And in the meanwhile, the technology works, and you know, there are some positives.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, look, the Boston College Chief Executives Club is a perfect example, right? We were able to have this conversation. We have a whole bunch of people watching it. We'll be able to have other people watch it who couldn't join us at 1:30 on a Tuesday. But we're missing those opportunities to just run into someone at the buffet line and someone that you, again, may not know when you introduce yourself. So I think we're living that. Reminder, folks, that we're going to open this up to our member audience for questions. I know we're getting a couple that are lining up, so please submit your questions and we'll open up your mic. My last question for you, and I've had these conversations since April, I guess, is our first Zoom conversation with the CEOs, which we've labeled them. And obviously social issues have been playing a larger and larger role. And General Electric most recently named a new chief diversity officer, and for the first time you appointed CDOs in each of your business units. Why was that such an important move for GE?
Yeah, we were very lucky. We had a senior GE leader in our healthcare business, Mike Barber, on the verge of retirement. And as things unfolded this year, we were able to get Mike to extend and transition out of a product-oriented role in our healthcare business into the corporate CDO role. I think that if you look at everything that we were dealing with the last couple of years at GE, we've touched on a lot of it. Our long history of being a real leader on diversity and inclusion waned a bit, mm-hmm. right? And Mike was somebody who understood what good looked like when we were really on top of our game. And I think has tremendous perspective as to what's appropriate in today's environment. So we were glad to get Mike to sign up to that role. We put in similar leadership in the businesses. We were talking earlier about running the business unit by unit, bite by bite. We wanted to make sure this was not just a corporate effort, but that we had the right leadership working with our CEOs in the businesses. And what we're engaged in right now is really a deep analysis as to where the real leverage points are for us in the life cycle of one's career to recruit, develop, and retain more effectively those populations that ought to be a bigger part of the GE team. And it's been fascinating. We have found small things and large things that we need to stop doing, that we need to improve upon. I don't think anyone thinks there are any quick hits or wins here. It's going to be it will need to be a sustained effort over time. But if we're going to lead in 2020, 2021, the way we have in years past, these appointments, that analysis, and in turn the implementation of those actions, I think are going to be a large part of our success. But it's been a period, as I'm sure it has been for many of the club members, Warren, of deep introspection, particularly for those of us in leadership positions as to how we can do better. And at GE, expectations are high in that regard, and we're comfortable with that.
Wonderful. I'm going to open it up to questions, and hopefully my team is going to be able to unmute the first person, who's going to be actually Andrew Kelsey. Andrew is actually a student here in the honors program at the Carroll School of Management at BC. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe he's heading to General Electric for his career and has a question about culture. So Andrew, with any luck, your microphone is off and you can join us.
Fantastic. Thank you, Warren. Can you both hear me?
Yes.
Fantastic. Yes, Larry, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join us. I'm a senior here at BC and also an incoming FMP with Gas Power. I've had two summers and I've really gotten to experience a lot of insightful experiences with General Electric, and I'm excited to start full time. So far today, you've spoken a lot about the importance of Kaizen, which can be achieved by getting to Gemba and asking questions. How can Boston College students who are hoping to work at General Electric best prepare themselves to become a part of this culture and ask the right questions to make a difference from the start?
Well, Andrew, congratulations and thank you. Congratulations on being an honors student at BC, and thank you for having the confidence and trust you do in us to start your career at GE. Andrew, I think the question is really a simple one. Why? And I don't know if you have been exposed to any of that in your two summers, right? But the power of what our friends in Japan call the five whys, asking why repeatedly, five times if necessary, to get to root cause, it's one of the most simple and most powerful management tools that I know of. We all had that tool right in our toolbox when we were 7 and 8 years old, and it ultimately pulled out of us somehow. But just never hesitate to ask why, because even as an FMP, our financial management program, you want to really understand things at Gemba, where the place where the real work gets done. And when you do, that perspective, that mastery is going to allow you to do great work wherever you go. But if you guess, if you assume, then you're running some risks for the company and for yourself that are unnecessary to run. So I don't mean to oversimplify the answer to the question, Andrew, but just asking why is a really powerful way to get at root cause, at real customer need. And I hope you find that useful when you start.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Larry.
I love the ask why, and I like the ask why five times. I think that that's something that it is, you know, we do start with that. And at some point in our career, we assume as opposed to asking. And that certainly pertains to myself. I won't speak for others, but that makes sense to me. Next up will be Stephen Ford, and James Bacon will be on deck. But Mr. Ford, let's see if we can get your mic turned off, on, and joining us.
Okay.
Yep. You there? Stephen, are we there?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now, yes.
Yes.
Okay. You were talking a few minutes ago about continuous evaluation, development, and coaching, which is great. That's a challenge for a lot of people to do. Do you evaluate your own direct reports and their reports on whether they're doing the same thing that you're doing? And how do you instill that culture that says the role of a leader is to develop leaders?
Well, I try to. Wouldn't claim to be perfect in that regard. I think you have to model the behavior. And then I think it's important to find a number of ways to reinforce and to verify, right? So we go through in the second quarter of every year a structured talent and org review with our CEOs, which mm-hmm. is a wonderful way to see what they're doing, the progress that they're making, how insightful, how nuanced, how calibrated are they about where their direct reports are or aren't. Mm-hmm. today and tomorrow. And in my experience, it's the cumulative effect over time of those conversations, let alone the modeled behaviors, which is really your best shot at creating that sort of leadership model.
Wonderful. Okay, thank you.
Jim Bacon is up next. See if we can work on your microphone and get you here with our guest, Larry Fult.
Thanks, Warren, can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Larry, great to have you involved here. I'm a member of the Board of Advisors of the school and an MBA at BC. My question is more about the company itself. You've gone through a massive restructuring, one of the biggest in American history of a storied company. Goes back to Thomas Edison and Mr. Coffin, who replaced him as CEO.
pressure.
I'm sorry?
No pressure there.
Right. I'm curious what you see as the drivers, because I know the units you're talking about, what the drivers of revenues and profits are looking out 5 years. And as an unrelated question, has being removed from the Dow been affected, do you think, the stock price in any way, valuation?
Well, I think in terms of revenue and profit and cash, we're well positioned. going forward. I think from a top line perspective, again, the energy transition creates a lot of opportunity for the portfolio businesses that we have. We just saw again here in the third quarter, we're the number one provider of onshore wind turbines in the United States. We've got an exciting new technology development underway to get into the offshore wind space in a more meaningful capacity. Aviation will recover, and we really just recently refreshed both our narrow body and our wide body engine platforms. And in healthcare, when we talk about personalized medicine, precision medicine, a lot of that starts with the imaging capabilities that are the heart of our nearly $17 billion healthcare business today. So I think we've got a wealth of opportunity from a top line perspective. Those businesses are inherently profitable. And getting back to what we talked about earlier with respect to lean, there's just a whole host of opportunities for us, not only to improve our performance with respect to safety, quality, and delivery for our team and for our customers, but also to have the financial performance track with that revenue growth. You asked about the Dow. That was one pothole along the way the last couple of years. It certainly didn't help getting removed. But at the end of the day, I think our valuation will be a function of two things. It will be a function of our performance and our trajectory. That's all within our control. And that's what we're focused on every day.
Well, I think Walgreens replaced GE, and you've probably outperformed that stock.
Well, hopefully when we look back in 5 years or 10 years, that'll hold for Walgreens and some other folks as well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jim. Our next question is from Mary Jo Meisner. Reminder, we're still taking questions. We've got some time. So if you've got them, let us know. But Mary Jo, good to hear from you again. And the floor is yours.
Can you hear me?
We can, Mary Jo.
Great. Larry, thanks for joining us. I have spent most of my time in Boston in two different industries. One is the media industry, newspaper business, and the other is in philanthropy at the Boston Foundation. Both of these really combine to be about community and, you know, service to the community in various kinds of ways. Could you talk a bit about GE and the role of the company? Continuing as a corporate community leader, a philanthropist, part of the civic leadership of this great city.
And it is a great city, Mary Jo. I tell people I don't think I would have joined the board of GE had the company not relocated to Boston. And it's certainly been a blast to be here the last 2 years in earnest. You know, I think when we came to Boston, there were a number of community-oriented commitments that we've made through our foundation and otherwise. It's been an excellent relationship for the company, not only in the community, but certainly with both the mayor and the governor. I think we've been nothing but supported and welcomed at every turn, even as we've hit some of those potholes. The support broadly has been outstanding. We've got a team here of about 200 strong in our headquarters here in the Seaport. Obviously, operations in the greater Boston area, probably the largest of which is up in Lynn. So we're happy Bostonians. We want to continue the transformation of the company to make GE stronger. That gives us a platform to be a stronger, more active member of the community, and that's what we're focused on doing.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Mary Jo. And next up is Diane Hessen. Diane's on our board, and good to hear from you again, Diane. So again, let's work on this microphone, and hopefully you're up. Hey, there you are.
Great. Larry, I'm going to ask you the predictable question that you'd probably rather not answer. We're at a critical point as a country, especially because in the aftermath of our election, we have a president who isn't willing to concede, who's supported by a large base of voters who believe our elections may have been fraudulent. So how do you think about that as a CEO? You know, how does it affect your ability to do business? And do you have a view about what needs to happen?
Well, I would, Diane, I would say that GE is a company, as you probably know, that has worked with presidents, heads of states all around the world for well over a century. And in this country, Democrats and Republicans alike. So I think my bias is one of optimism. There's no question that it has been a tense period for the country, all the more so here of late. But the election will be settled. It may not be settled to the satisfaction of everyone, but one of the great enduring aspects of our country is that those elections are settled. And I think with everything going on, COVID, climate, and the like, I'm optimistic. Some may say I'm naive, but I'm optimistic that when we get into 2021 and things have settled out, that folks in Washington, and I was born in Washington, I grew up there, I know a little bit about how that place works. I think there's an even chance that folks will come together and try to do a few things for the improvement and the betterment of the country. Time will tell, but I'm hopeful that that's the case.
Well said, and thanks, Diane. Peter Bell, looks like you've got your hand up. I'm going to turn it to you with Karen Keyes up next. But Peter, the floor is yours. Peter, are you there?
Hey, can you hear me, Warren?
We can, Peter. Good to hear from you.
Okay. All right, Warren, thanks for letting me join. And Larry, thanks. I'm calling in from Menlo Park, California. It's great to have you with us. And it was nice to hear from the student, Andrew. I guess on a broader topic, or as you think about talent at GE, especially for our young people who might be listening, but even for many of us around the country that are joining, is what sort of the skills or talents would you advise young people to develop while they're in college or in the first few years of their career to make them really viable candidates for companies like GE, but for the broader workforce, and maybe just your guidance and some of the things that you've done over your career?
Peter, what I have long been a believer in is that early in one's career, the more time you can spend close to the action, the better off you are. Now, I used the word gemba earlier, right? The Japanese term for the place where the real work gets done, or where the action takes place. That can be in a sales role out with customers every day. It can be in a factory, in a lab, designing or building product. But that's business. And I think to the extent that you study it and it's a bit of an abstraction, you don't accumulate the scar tissue, the instincts, the intuition that I think are important later in life. I may be biased because those were formative experiences for me, but it's what I would tell my MBA students when I was teaching over the last several years. And when that's coupled with real leadership opportunities, and it doesn't need to be looking after 1,000 people, it can be looking after 10. That's really where you, I think, develop the skills we were talking about earlier in terms of really figuring out how to evaluate people, how to help people, how to hire and fire and all of that. And if you, I think, get into your late 20s, early 30s and have accumulated at least some early experiences at the stove face of business, be that in a factory, in a lab with customers, what have you, and you've had to do more than just take care of yourself, you're probably on your way. If you don't get those experiences early on, I think they're hard to replicate later, particularly if you end up being promoted into to various roles. So those are the thoughts that come immediately to mind.
That's great, Larry. I love it. Close to the action. Great comments. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks for joining us from California. We've got weather here in Boston to rival whatever you've got as we hit 70 here in Boston. So I don't want to hear what's going on there and what will be happening for the next several months for weather. Anyways, Karen Keyes, you're up. Turn your mic off and ask Larry your question. We can get Karen to join us. Hello? Karen, are you there? Karen, can you hear us? Let's see if she can figure that out. I want to follow up. One of the things that you've been talking a lot about is culture and sort of training others. One of the things you haven't talked about, and I'm always curious, is sort of the role of mentorship. And, you know, you're younger, people take you under their wings, and then you return the favor in kind. Can you tell us a little bit about what mentors that you've had and sort of advice that they've given you that has shaped sort of your career and still plays a role today?
Sure. I think the best mentors that I have had, Warren, have been those people who were both keen observers of my behavior and those who were quite comfortable giving feedback in a very direct and straightforward fashion. I remember coming out of business school, I didn't fully appreciate that it was all about the team, right? I thought it was, you particularly when you come out of, you know, with an MBA, you feel a lot of pressure, I think, and in the classroom, sometimes you think it's all about you. It's an individual game, not a team sport, right? So getting some pretty direct feedback early in my career about making sure that I brought everybody along was incredibly valuable. And that wasn't something I would have gleaned on my own or had I gotten direct or indirect feedback rather, right? It was some tough love early on from a few people that was invaluable. I'm still working on those things, right? I mean, some of those weaknesses I think tend to stay with you maybe for a lifetime, but to the extent you can round those edges, you're usually better off. But that's what comes immediately to mind.
Yeah, no, there's always people who are willing to at least give you some sort of positive feedback. And oftentimes it's genuine, but I think it's the true mentors who are able to candidly, constructively give you ways to improve, because that's the only way to get better, right?
That's the only way to get better. And what I think what's so important in those moments is not only the what, but the how, yeah. Right? Warren, you could tell me, Larry, we need you to get out there and dunk the basketball. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen, right? Unless you can show me how to do that in some fashion. And I think it's easy to make the observation and think you've helped somebody, but if you're not able to coach them up, so to speak, then it's not as constructive, it's not as helpful.
Absolutely, and I actually know I'm looking at our list of attendees. I've got a couple of my mentors who are on this call, so I'm very much looking forward to catching up with them later in the week so they can tell me how I bungled today and how to make it better. But again, it's good stuff. Karen, we're going to give a shot again to having you join us and see if we can unmute you and let you speak. And then up after that will be Bill Fisher. But Karen, you're up if we can figure out the technology. Are you there? Karen, are you able to join us or ask a question? Your hand is up, but Hello? All right, well, let's turn to Bill Fisher. Bill, you posted a question. Let's get you on the microphone and have your chance at asking Larry a question.
Okay, so I have to admit that I'm intimidated about even turning the microphone on. I think that's working now. Larry, thank you so much. And Warren, thank you for, this is my first meeting. I'm on the Dean's Advisory Board, and it was a real pleasure to hear your comments. I'm interested in your thinking about China in the long run. I'm wondering, you know, we've seen some firms reduce their footprint in China. I suspect others are enlarging it. There's the fear of a separation of infrastructures between two internets and two sets of standards going forward. Are you bullish or bearish about China's role in the future?
Well, maybe, Bill, a little bit of both. But I think it's undeniable that the Chinese economy is going to continue to grow, probably at an accelerated rate, such that it will be larger and at some point will dwarf most of the major Western economies, including ours, in time. I don't think there's really much dispute about that. So strategically, if you're in a business like GE, be it in healthcare, aviation, power and renewables, that's a market we cannot afford to sit out. That doesn't mean it's easy, doesn't mean it's straightforward. And you know, there are a host of challenges in that regard. But as I told our China team just a week ago, despite the headlines of the day, trade tensions, decoupling talk, and all the rest, and there will be more of that, I think, as we go forward, we're committed to the China market. We think it's an important market. We think it can be a good, profitable, growing bit of business for us, and we're in for the long term. Again, I wouldn't try to sugarcoat that. There are issues, there are challenges, but you just can't be in the types of businesses that we're in and think that you're going to lead technically without actively participating in the China market.
Okay. And that means fully integrated China and the rest of the world, what you do, product development, things of that nature?
Well, it'll be a different construct in different businesses, right? Because we will aggressively localize where we can and protect IP where we must.
Okay, thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Bill. I'm going to shift gears now and head to what we've affectionately been calling our lightning round. Hopefully these are, I don't want to say softball questions, but a little bit more personal. And the first question I've had, and I've been enjoying the answers of our CEO guests all summer and fall. What was your first paying job?
I think it was as a welder's helper for a small welding and machine shop business my parents ran that my grandfather had founded in the Maryland suburbs of Washington in 1938.
A welder's apprentice.
Well, I wouldn't even say apprentice. I just hauled heavy things around in the heat of a July August day.
Man, that does not sound. I guess that's building character, correct? Is that what you were told?
I learned more in those summers than I realized at the time. Work and people.
That's great. I mean, that's the first time I've heard that. We've got a lot of paper boys and some other sort of standard, you know, customer service positions. But that's a good one. What was the last great book that you read?
Well, I have to go back to my summer reading. It's been a busy fall, but I would say a book on Frederick Douglass. It's entitled Frederick Douglass by David Blight, who's a famed historian down at Yale.
Yep. Certainly, it's timely, right?
timely, but also timeless. Douglas was born on a small farm, literally hard by the creek I fished on a lot in Maryland growing up. Mm-hmm. So I was always fascinated by that story. I never kind of delved into it. And this summer inspired me to kind of go back. And I read the Douglas book by Blight. I reread the Garrow book, Bearing the Cross, on Martin Luther King, and just provided a lot of perspective, which was, I thought, in order.
Yeah,
conversation this summer.
Certainly valuable, right? I mean, I think many of us this summer harken back to important stories and books and lessons that we've learned to recalibrate and sort of find our center again, if you will. Last song or album that you intentionally listened to, not something that was on in the background, but something that you affirmatively put on to listen to.
I listen to a lot of Zac Brown Band these days.
Is that something you can do at the office, or it's on the way home? Is it?
Well, given that nobody's here frequently, I can do it in the office. I can do it on the Peloton. I can do it pretty much anywhere.
And you've been enjoying you've been spending some time on the Peloton this summer, or in general?
I have. It's been one of my COVID habits.
Good. I'll look you up when I'm on that. It really has been a fascinating experience watching that community come together in different ways. I've spent my time on a bicycle this summer as well. Favorite guilty food?
Probably cookies and cream, ice cream.
So if we were to come into your office at some point, you'd have Zac Brown cranked up to 11 with some cookies and cream and the Peloton in the corner. Is that sort of picturing the right?
We might put the Zac Brown on with my phone, but there's no ice cream and no Peloton to be seen. I do have some Red Sox memorabilia, but that's about it. Boring.
Fantastic. You've been compared to Bill Belichick and you like the Red Sox. I think that this entire session is well worth it, right? We've found your North Star. So life is good. All kidding aside, I end these sessions with every CEO asking them to share sort of a message of hope. It's been a long 2020, and it's not over yet. Yeah. But we've been asking the guests to give us some message, something that when we all turn off our Zoom and head home, can give us that sort of positive reinforcement, that message to bring us home. So again, I ask you as the CEO and our guest today for our last question, if you could share some message of hope with us today.
Sure. Well, it's a wonderful way, Warren, to conclude the session. And you think about the group here on the call, right? We all have been impacted, but probably less so than so many, given what COVID has meant here and abroad. If I was answering this question anywhere else, I think I'd have the same answer. So I don't mean to kind of play to the Boston crowd, but I am a Red Sox fan, a lifelong Red Sox fan, by the way. It's one of the benefits of growing up in Washington. We didn't have a team, so you got to pick yours. Mm-hmm. But we just take it one step at a time, right? And if we maintain a positive attitude, if we remain hopeful, things usually work out. And you know, the example I always share with folks is we simply have got to get Dave Roberts to second base. Right. And remember back in October of 2004, right? The Sox season was almost over. Millar walks and Dave Roberts goes into pinch run for Millar. And all we've got to do is get Roberts to steal second. Not that we had anything to do with it, right? But that then led to something else. And then the next thing you know, it's 3-1. And then from there, we come back and we beat the Yankees 4-3. So obviously Boston has a lot of comeback stories in sports, but I think those are relevant in terms of just remembering that there's always something that can be done to improve the trajectory of things. And that's what we do as leaders, hopefully, is just find a way to just take that next step and encourage folks to sometimes just steal second base, and we'll take it from there.
Well, I'm certainly biased as a Red Sox fan and someone who teaches about the business of sports here at BC. And, you know, I think sports is so important, right? It builds community in ways that other things don't. And obviously it's part of the fabric that we have here in Boston, but I love the concept of just the Dave Roberts getting a second, right? Because then you can hear Millar in the background saying, well, don't let us get to Pedro and Schilling, and then it's game seven and who knows, right? And so I sort of feel that here in November of 2020, you know, we're just waiting for that one small thing that will start that tidal wave of optimism, right, and a return to not normal, but the future and where things are going. And maybe it's the Pfizer news this week. Maybe it's the election. Maybe it's the heat out here in Boston in October and November. Yeah.
No, Warren, I tell you, I don't know if Millar walked yesterday or not, but the optimism in our aviation business and with the airline CEOs that I've been in contact with the last day was palpable. Now, we're a long way away from the wide distribution, but those are the sorts of signs that I think remind us that we'll get through this.
Well, it's the Japanese proverb, right? You get knocked down seven times, you stand up eight. And maybe we're standing up that eighth time today. So again, I really appreciate you joining us. Certainly on behalf of our members of Boston College and Carroll School of Management, thank you to you and General Electric for joining us today, for your team for helping out, and for giving us that bit of optimism as we think about the future, where we're going, and let's collectively as a group and as a city and a community, let's get somebody to second base so we can end this game and move on. So thank you, sir.
Warren, good to be with you. Thanks. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. All the best. Folks, if we don't see you, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Stay tuned for more news from our email, and have a great day, everybody. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast of the Boston College Chief Executives Club featuring Larry Culp, Chair and CEO of General Electric. To learn more about the Boston College Chief Executives Club, a program of the Carroll School of Management at Boston College, please visit our website at www.bc.edu/CEO Club.